Translation and Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. If there is such inconceivable potency in material objects, why should we not believe in the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Purport. The argument of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described in this verse can be very easily understood, even by a common man, if he simply thinks of the activities of the sun, which has been giving off unlimited amounts of heat and light since time immemorial, and yet has not even slightly decreased in power. Modern science believes that it is by sunshine that the entire cosmic manifestation is maintained, and actually one can see how the actions and reactions of sunshine maintain order throughout the universe. The growth of vegetables and even the rotation of the planets take place due to the heat and light of the sun. Sometimes, therefore, modern scientists consider the sun to be the original cause of creation, not knowing that the sun is only a medium, for it is also created by the supreme energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Aside from the sun and the touchstone, there are many other material things that transform their energy in different ways and yet remain as they are. It's not necessary, therefore, for the original cause, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to change due to the changes of or transformations of his different energies. The falsity of Sripad Shankaracharya's explanation of Vivartavada and Parinamvada has been detected by the Vaishnava Acharyas, especially Jiva Goswami, whose opinion is that actually Shankara did not understand the Vedanta Sutra. In Shankara's explanation of one sutra, Ananda Mayobhyasat, he has interpreted the affix mayat with such word jugglery that this very explanation proves that he had little knowledge of the Vedanta Sutra, but simply wanted to support his impersonalism through the aphorisms of the Vedanta Sutra. Actually, however, he failed to do so because he could not put forward strong arguments. In this connection, Srila Jiva Goswami cites the phrase Brahma Pucham Pratishtha Tattari Upanishad 2.5, which gives Vedic evidence that Brahman is the origin of everything. In explaining this verse, Sripad Shankaracharya interpreted various Sanskrit words in such a way that he implied, according to Jiva Goswami, that Vyasadeva had very little knowledge of higher logic. Such unscrupulous deviation from the real meaning of the Vedanta Sutra has created a class of men who, by word jugglery, try to derive various indirect meanings from the Vedic literature, especially the Bhagavad Gita. One of them has even explained that the word Kurukshetra refers to the body. Such interpretations imply, however, that neither Lord Krishna nor Vyasadeva had a proper sense of word usage or etymological adjustment. They lead to assume that since Lord Krishna could not personally sense the meaning of what he was speaking, and Vyasadeva didn't know the meaning of what he was writing, Lord Krishna left his book to be explained later by the Mayavadis. Such interpretations merely prove, however, that their proponents have very little philosophical sense. Instead of wasting one's time falsely deriving such indirect meanings from the Vedanta Sutra and other Vedic literatures, one should accept the words of these books as they are. In presenting Bhagavad Gita as it is, therefore, we haven't changed the meaning of the original words. Similarly, if one studies the Vedanta Sutra as it is without whimsical and capricious adulteration, one can understand the Vedanta Sutra very easily. Srila Vyasadeva therefore explains the Vedanta Sutra beginning from the first sutra, Janmadhyasya Yataha, in his Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.1. Janmadhyasya Yataha Nvaryat Itaratas Chartesh Abhijana Svarat. I meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, the transcendental reality who is the primeval cause of all causes, from whom all manifested universes arise, to whom they dwell, and by whom they are destroyed. I meditate upon that eternally effulgent Lord who is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations and yet is fully independent. The Supreme Personality of Godhead knows very well how to do everything perfectly. He is abhidya, always fully conscious. The Lord therefore says in the Bhagavad Gita 7:26 that he knows everything, past, present and future, but that no one but the devotee knows him as he is. Therefore, the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, is at least partially understood by devotees of the Lord. But the Mayavadi philosophers, who unnecessarily speculate to understand the absolute truth, simply waste their time. 1 again, this text. If there is such inconceivable potency in material objects, why should we not believe in the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Just to refresh in our memory what's been described in this chapter, in that particular part of the chapter, we understand that Lord Chaitanya, even though superficially he was taken sannyas in Mayavad school, so externally he looked like Mayavadi sannyasi. He had the same robes, he looked exactly the same, but nevertheless he was avoiding mixing with Mayavadis for obvious reasons. But then Mayavadis were blaspheming him, and Lord Chaitanya's devotees were very disturbed by that blasphemy. And Lord Chaitanya decided to show mercy to Mayavadis and Yasis. And even though he never accepted any invitations for lunch with Mayavadis, but then when one Brahman came to him and he said, inspired by the Lord from within the heart, he said, even though you do not accept any invitations for lunch with Mayavadis, but somehow I want to still invite you. And everybody's surprised, Lord Chaitanya said, yes, I'll come. Because his plan was to convert the sannyasis. And then he came, and when he came, he washed his feet and he sat very humbly near the place where the feet washing was done, which was considered to be contaminated. But when he was sitting, he was emanating such an effulgence that all the sannyasis noticed that. And they realized that he is the Supreme Lord. We can safely say that in the entire history of Mayavad lineage, there were only two personalities who displayed perfection according to their goals. There was one person who completely realized Brahman, who was completely Brahman realized, and that was Shankaracharya himself, because he is Lord Shiva. And there was only one instance when sannyasi was actually God. And that was Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Mayavadi sannyasis calling themselves Narayan, Narayan. But in this instance, that was real Narayan. That was Lord Chaitanya. And so they recognized that he is actually the Supreme Lord. He attained full perfection because he was emanating amazing bodily effulgence. And they became very attracted by that. And then they were telling him, Sripadji, why are you sitting in this unclean place? Please come and sit with us? And Lord Chaitanya said, well, I'm not fit to sit with you in your company because I'm a very low-class sannyasi. They have these gradations in Mayava school from higher to lower. And Lord Chaitanya took sannyas from Kesha Bharati, who belonged to that lower level of sannyas. But nevertheless, Mayavadis were insisting, yes, please come, we want to ask you something. And Lord Chaitanya agreed, and then they were asking, why are you dancing and singing like a sentimentalist? You're supposed to be studying Vedanta. And then Lord Chaitanya, of course, explained that spiritual master considered me to be a fool, unfit to study Vedanta, and therefore he told me, just chant Hare Krishna, and I started doing so, and I felt complete ecstasy, which my spiritual master later explained was pure love of God. And so I'm very happy to be on that level. And of course, Lord Chaitanya was very well known as a great scholar and pandit. He was known as Nimai Pandit from his very childhood. So the statement that he was incapable to understand Vedanta Sutra was, of course, a clear manifestation of his humility. And therefore, sannyasi Mayavadis, they wanted to hear from Lord Chaitanya what's the reason he is not studying the Vedanta Sutra. And then, of course, Lord Chaitanya explains to them that Mayavad understanding of Vedanta Sutra is completely wrong. And this was also the reason why he was avoiding the association with Mayavadi sannyasis, because their understanding was completely wrong. And here he gives the proper understanding of Vedanta Sutra, which is the sutra means codes, and Veda Anta, Veda means knowledge, and Anta means ultimate. So the ultimate knowledge in form of codes, this is what Vedanta Sutra is. So the entire knowledge and the topmost knowledge of the Vedas was recorded by Srila Vyasadeva in Vedanta Sutra. And nevertheless, as it was explained in this chapter by Srila Prabhupada, Mayavadis and Yasis, they misinterpret the meaning of Vedanta in various ways. Srila Prabhupada specifically mentions in this purpose, and actually he mentions at the same point few purports earlier in here, the example how they twist Vedanta to fit into their, you know, understanding. Srila Prabhupada refers to Jiva Goswami, who detected the falsity of Mayavad explanation. So Jiva Goswami was a spiritual detective who caught Sripad Shankaracharya giving these false explanations. And actually, you know, preparing for this class, I was trying to understand what Srila Prabhupada is referring to, because he refers to that point, but he doesn't give any elaborations. And I was listening, I was trying to understand it, listening to the classes of other devotees on that point. I could never find any proper explanations. And so, as the last resort, I had to look into the Sharirika Bhashya of Shankaracharya and read his purports to understand what he is doing. And of course, it's been explained that anyone who is reading the Sharirika Bhashya of Shankaracharya is doomed spiritually. So my only hope is the mercy of a Vaishnavas. No, but Anyway, I was trying to do it as a service to all of you. And it's actually very interesting because if you know the sequence of the verses in Vedanta Sutra, starting from Atato Brahma Jigyasa, now there is a time to inquire about the spiritual meaning of life, the meaning of life, what is spirit, what does it mean, spiritual. And then the very next sutra is explaining, is giving an answer to that question. Janma diyasya yata. Janma means birth, adi means etc. Creation, maintenance, destruction. Asya, of him, yata, therefore, thereof. So it's been explained that he is the source of creation, maintenance, and destruction. And then all the further verses, and of course the perfect explanation of Vedanta Sutra is Srimad Bhagavatam, to which Srila Prabhupada is also referring in the end of the purport, the very first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Janma diyasya yata anvayat itaratas charteshu abhigya svarat tena brahma ridaya adikavaya muhyanti yat suraha tejavarim ridam yata vinimayo yatra trisargum risha Danna svena sadani rasta kuhakam satyam param dimahi. And of course, the very first line is Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I offer my respects to the Supreme Lord Vasudev, who is the source of everything, who is the source of creation, maintenance, and destruction. And he is directly and indirectly aware of everything, so he is in charge of everything. Itarastas chartaju abhigya svarat. So he is all cognizant, and svarat, he is independent as well. Tene brahma hridaya adikavaya. He was the one who imparted complete or perfect knowledge into the heart of whom? Lord Brahma, the first created being. Muhyanti yat surayaha. And he is bewildering even to the suras, to the great demigods. Tejavarim ridam yatha vinyamayo yatratri sangom risha. That he he's the master of the entire cosmic manifestation. All the three worlds, which appear factual due to his illusory potency. Danna svena sadanya rasta. Nevertheless, he himself is situated in Danna svena, in his eternal spiritual abode, sadani rasta kuhakam satyam param dimahi. And that abode, and he is completely free from any imperfections, and this is the person, dimahi, upon whom I meditate. And dimahi is also used in Gayatri mantras, as we know. So Srila Prabhupada says that this is a perfect Gayatri mantra, meditating on the Supreme Lord. So this is the perfect explanation of Vedanta Sutra. And that is Srimad Bhagavatam, perfect commentary of the author of Vedanta Sutra, Srila Vyasadev. But then, I'm just mentioning that to make a point that all the verses of Vedanta Sutra, they start with glorifying the Supreme Lord and explaining his position. But what Shankaracharya does, he says, it's not the Supreme Lord, it's a living entity. who is glorified. And he uses that verse, Anandamaya Vyasat, which is the 12th verse of Vedanta Sutra, to prove his point. And how he does that? He refers to Tathagata Upanishad, and probably many of you know about five koshas, five levels of consciousness, starting with Anamaya and finishing with Anandamaya. And so he refers to that because this explanation is given in Tathagata Upanishad. And he says that Anandamaya, which in those verses referring to the living entity, because living entity is also full of bliss, he says this, this is the proof that Anandamaya Vyasat in Vedanta Sutra also refers to the living entity. And instead of using the primary meaning of Maya, which is energy, he says Maya means abundance, which is the secondary meaning of the word Maya. Anyway, he basically twists and turns things to try to prove that Vedanta Sutra is really speaking about Jiva, not about the Supreme Lord. And that Jiva and Supreme Lord are equal in all respects. Which is, of course, great philosophy for materialistic people. It's a real discovery for them. As some people say, I was a complete atheist until I realized that I am God. So now I really believe in God. That God which I see in the mirror. Like one woman told to the other that I had to divorce my husband on the basis of religious differences. And what was the difference? Because he believed that he is God and I didn't. So that was our religious differences. And so, yeah, this is very popular philosophy in the material world. Unfortunately, it's completely inconsistent. Absolutely inconsistent. There is no way, if you look into the Mayavad philosophy, which is a complete waste of time, trying to prepare for this class, I was studying about Mayavad, I thought, what a nonsense. Because they explain that there is no difference between Jiva and God. Everything is one. This is Shankaracharya's philosophy. Everything is Brahman. But we are the Brahman covered by ignorance. And Brahman is all perfect. And where the ignorance came from, how the ignorance appeared in all perfect Brahman, Shankaracharya says it's inconceivable. So it's basically cheating philosophy with plenty of gaps. And when there is any gap, they say it's inconceivable. What is actually inconceivable is the Supreme Lord. But we can understand, at least we can understand, Jai Shri Shri Radha Gopalananda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. At least we can understand that we cannot understand the Supreme Lord. Srila Prabhupada refers to Bhagavad Gita 7:26, in which Krishna says, I know everything, but no one knows me. And Srila Prabhupada explains that devotees, they understand Krishna at least partially. But Mayavadis, they cannot understand him. Why? Why partially? Because no one can really understand the Supreme Lord. Even Krishna cannot understand himself at times. What to speak of others? He is so amazing. But at least devotees have quite a good understanding of the Supreme Lord. Whatever devotees don't understand, at least they understand why they don't understand. Because Lord is so great. Because yes, I have my limitations. But it's not like, at least there are all the questions which have answers in our philosophy. But that philosophy, Mayavad philosophy, is full of gaps. And specifically in this series of verses, Lord Chaitanya is referring to inconceivable potency of the Supreme Lord, and he gives an example of Chintamani stone to help Mayavadis to understand how the Lord is acting. That, of course, is not very helpful for us because none of us ever saw a Chintamani stone. But then to help us with more comprehensive examples, Srila Prabhupada speaks about the sun, which is quite an amazing object if we think about it. You know, if you know, when before I ever learned about Krishna consciousness, I was always thinking, you know, how something can burn for so long and be so powerful. And it doesn't seem, you know, what is in there to burn like that? So that's inconceivable. We don't see these examples. And even though sun is, you know, distributing so much heat and light, it doesn't seem to diminish in potency. Of course, some scientists say that still it is diminishing gradually, and in few billions of years it will run out. Again, you know, who will live long enough to check whether they were right or wrong? But anyway, it's a very amazing object. You know, there are so many amazing, inconceivable things in nature that we can, you know, someone can give the whole series of seminars on the subject, inconceivable manifestations in nature. Even the earth we are living in, you know, it's a seemingly material object, but then it is hot inside. And, you know, it's also another question. Who is burning what and how it happened, you know? Why it is hot? Because we don't see any material objects which are hot inside. But the living body is hot inside because there is a soul inside. And so Shastras are explaining that earth is not an object, it's a living entity. So therefore, it has heat inside. And so there are so many inconceivable things in nature, and there are unlimited examples that something can change the quality of those who come in touch without changing its own quality. We've just been to the Israel recently with His Holiness Indradyumna Maharaj, and devotees took us to the Dead Sea. And Dead Sea is known to cure so many people from so many diseases, but nevertheless, Dead Sea doesn't become contaminated by curing people. Of course, these are material examples which are limited. But even in the law of physics, one of the primary laws is the law of conservation of energy. It says that energy is not created and it's not destroyed. It's always there. It's just transformed from one object to another. So there are so many things, even in the material world, which never change. The energy never changes. The amount of water, for example, on this planet never changes. It just transforms from one place to the other. So there are many examples of what we call parinam, Parinamavada, transformation of energy. And so Lord's energy is transformed and Lord does not change, which is going against the Mayavadi understanding that Lord became distributed throughout his creation and therefore he doesn't exist as a person. You know, as they say, in the same way as a piece of paper which is torn apart, and so all the pieces are existing, but the piece of paper as such does not exist. So it's, yeah, these examples are, of course, Chintamani is also a kind of material example, even though it says that spiritual world is consisting of Chintamanis, but these are spiritual Chintamani stones, but apparently there is a material Chintamani also, which transforms metal into gold. Yes, that it is inconceivable how the Lord can emanate unlimited creations and still remain the same, intact, without decreasing in his power, even a little bit. So I listened to Ravindra Saurabh, who gives an example from mathematics, and he says, Ravindra Saurabh, he says that according to mathematics, infinity minus infinity is equal to infinity. So we can understand that the Supreme Lord, being infinite, he can manifest infinite universes and everything and still remain the same, changeless. So this is the nature of the Lord. And of course, we may wonder why Shankaracharya tried so hard to twist and turn everything and bewilder the whole world. As it's been explained early in the chapter, he did so according to the order of the Supreme Lord. So it's an interesting aspect, because when we hear the Mayavadi philosophy like that, we think, you know, why these people bewilder everybody? And so we may ask ourselves a question, why Srila Prabhupada's, it's almost like his, you know, greatest hobby, bashing Mayavadis almost at every page of his books. And so we may ask, why does he do that? Does it mean that we have to, you know, kind of do a Google search and find all the Mayavadi centers and ashrams in London and in UK and launch an attack on them and arrest them all and put them in a, you know, prison cells, lock them up and provide them with sets of Prabhupada books and keep them there for as long as they don't, you know, admit that their philosophy is wrong. So was that the reason why Srila Prabhupada attacked Mayavadis like that? So that is kind of a natural question which should arise in our minds. But in fact, it's very interesting that the same Ravindra Saurabh, who is a wonderful Vaishnava and one of the most influential leaders and gurus in our society, he told that before he became a devotee, he was really immersed in studying Shankaracharya's philosophy. So he was superficially a follower of Shankaracharya. And he was trying to practice whatever was suggested there. And he said, you know, there were obvious gaps in the philosophy of Shankaracharya. And so he was trying to understand how to bridge those gaps. But it's only when he came across Srila Prabhupada's movement and Srila Prabhupada's explanations, only then he could understand. And so that made him really solid devotee. So, in fact, if someone is sincere, when he comes across Shankaracharya's philosophy, then it helps one, A, to develop faith in Vedas, and B, to try to bridge the gaps in one's understanding. And so, in one sense, this was the plan of Shankaracharya, to give all sincere people a kind of guidance towards Krishna. And that's why he says, Bhaja Govinda, Bhaja Govinda, Bhaja Govinda Mutamate. You fools just worship Govinda. Your jugglery of words will not help you at the time of death. And, you know, even though it's considered to be kind of poison, you know, Shankaracharya's philosophy, this is what Srila Prabhupada says. But even poison, even in the material world, poison can be useful. Even snake's poison is used to cure certain diseases. For example, drug is poison, but then it can be used for medical purposes. So we can understand, for completely materialistic people, Shankaracharya's philosophy can be helpful. But for devotees, it will be harmful. If devotee will start following it, it will be a downfall for a devotee. In the same way as for healthy person, taking drugs means to destroy oneself. So this is what we should understand. But then we can say, oh, but we are not. Why Srila Prabhupada? So does it mean Srila Prabhupada is preaching to us about Mayavad philosophy and falsity of it? Yes, and he has very valid point to make, because I heard from number of Prabhupada disciples when they were asking Srila Prabhupada, why are you stressing so much on this Mayavad philosophy? Because it's not so relevant in here in the West, you know, all these Mayavadis, they are all in India. At least it was the case when Srila Prabhupada was preaching, that there were very few Mayavadis in the West. And why are you stressing on this so much? And Srila Prabhupada said, because I'm doing it for you. Because you have these tendencies. And that proved later. There was an instance described in Srila Prabhupada's Lilamrita when devotees were influenced. I think it's a chapter called ISKCON Under Threat or something like that. Anyway, describing the events which took part in the late 1970. So basically what happened, that some Prabhupada disciples, they were influenced by the criticism coming from certain Gaudiya Math members, Prabhupada's God brothers. And they were trying to kind of influence some of his disciples, and they wanted to bring in some leader from Gaudiya Math to take over ISKCON's affairs. And Prabhupada was, of course, very unhappy with that. And so he managed to straighten them out on this one. And he made an interesting move. He gave sannyas to a few troublemakers and sent them out to preach. But then they started preaching something else. They started saying that, and Srila Prabhupada was so upset with that he left America and he went to Japan. And then these devotees started preaching that actually Srila Prabhupada became upset because we minimized his position. We failed to realize that Srila Prabhupada was God. He was Krishna. And when Srila Prabhupada heard that, he said, that's it. Mayavad entered our society. Now they are preaching Mayavad, that Guru is equal to God. Guru should be worshipped as God, but it doesn't mean that Guru is Krishna. And so we can understand from this instance that there is a danger of us being influenced by Mayavad. So the enemies are not outside of us. It's not that we have to straighten out Mayavad. Of course, this is the first impression we are getting. When I was a very young devotee, you know, I was reading about all these Mayavadis, and I was thinking, who are these rascals? If I ever come across any of them. And so Krishna arranged that I was in Vrindavan, actually. And that was quite a few years back in the past century, in the mid-90s perhaps. And I was, I went to the bank to do the foreign exchange. That was the only place where you could do foreign exchange at those times in India. There were no separate places. We had to go to the bank. And so when I was there, there were practically no people there. And then one Brajabasi entered into the building, elderly man accompanied by one young man, either disciple or servant or both. And then when that elderly man saw me, he said, "Oh, you're a brahmachari studying Bhagavad Gita." I said, "Yes, Maharaj, I'm trying." And he said, "So, if you read Bhagavad Gita, you should be knowing that you are Krishna now." And I was shocked. I said, "I'm not Krishna. I'm Krishna's servant." And he said, "No, no, you are Krishna. And I'm also Krishna. We're all Krishnas." And, you know, I just couldn't believe it. And I felt that, you know, kind of irritation inside of me, and actually anger. I was thinking, you know, who is this man? And then I challenged him. I said, "So you think you are Krishna?" He said, "Yes, yes, of course, I am Krishna." And I said, "You know that one of Krishna's expansions, Mahavishnu, so many universes emanating from his body. And what does your body emanate? Only stool and urine. And you still think you are Krishna?" And so that man kept quiet. But then, you know, the cashier at the till, he told me, "How do you speak to, you know, this elderly man, you know, in such a disrespectful way?" And I turned to him, I said, "Do you also believe in this philosophy?" He said, "No, no. Leave me alone." So, but, of course, we can see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's example in this chapter, that he is not offending Mayavad Sannyasis, and he is behaving with them very respectfully and very humbly. And actually, this is how he wins their hearts, and this is how he converts them. And if we just challenge people and upset people, we'll just make them into our enemies. And of course, Srila Prabhupada was doing that, but then, you know, he was powerful enough to influence people. But we should ask ourselves whether we will achieve purposes in such a way. And this is not the primary reason why Srila Prabhupada was presenting this understanding to us, that actually practically any devotee, any senior devotee I spoke with, they all agree with this point, that it's Mayavadi within whom we should defeat and convert into Vaishnava. And this is the primary reason why Srila Prabhupada explains so much, gives so much emphasis to this point, single point in our philosophy. And this is why all the acharyas, they speak so much on this subject. Because there is a tendency, very strong tendency, as Gauranga Prabhu jokes, that Sometimes spiritual advancement is happening in a very peculiar way. That first, when someone joins the movement, he thinks, I am dasa, dasa, anudas, right? Servant of everybody. I am the lowest of all. My position is the most humble. But when some time passes, one gets a little bit used to the environment, then one thinks, oh, I'm just anudas. I'm small servant, but still I'm servant. Then after some time, one gets initiated, then one becomes officially das. Then one becomes Prabhu. And the danger is that after some time, one may think of himself as Mahaprabhu. So then, you know, we become competitors of Mahaprabhu. So this is the danger, and Srila Prabhupada explains in one class what is the difference between the mentality of mayavadi and a devotee. He says that mayavadis and devotees, they read the same book, Bhagavad Gita, the same verse where Krishna says, abandon all varieties of religion and surrender unto me. But then devotee says, Krishna is saying surrender unto me, so please, let us surrender unto Krishna. But mayavadi will say, Krishna says, surrender unto me, because I am Krishna, you should all surrender unto me. So we can understand that the two greatest dangers of mayavad are A, pride, which comes from devotional achievements, which is, I think, the single most greatest obstacle on the path of spiritual advancement. And second one is desire to enjoy in this position. And so we can understand that desire to control and enjoy, these are the two flaws in the conditioned souls. And this is what this philosophy propounds, finally, ultimately, and this is what we need to avoid in our spiritual life. And it seems to be the main reason why Srila Prabhupada speaks about this philosophy so much. Alright, so thank you. Thank you very much. If you have any comments or questions, Sutapa Prabhu said we can finish before 9:15, so we have a few more minutes.